Thursday night, February 12th, Parshat Mishpatim, Rabbi Moshe Bernstein, giving shiur.
Okay, you all?
Okay.
We are on to have...
Oh, stop it. Bennett, sit down. thank you. When Howie asked me to speak and told me which Parsha, I knew right away, or I had a pretty good idea immediately, what I was going to talk about. One of the classic problems... in writing commentary among the Rishonim is particularly the tension what we call between pshat and drash, between the simple sense of the text and the meaning which it is endowed with by Chazal. But in cases where we're dealing with narrative, we're dealing with the stories of the Torah, the tension is not a profound one or a highly strung one, because you can read the pshat narrative on the one hand, and you can take the midrashim which Chazal superimpose on the text and treat them simultaneously, separately, however you choose to do it. The problem comes about in particular when you're dealing with halakha. Because the question really cuts two ways. For the Pashtun, you have to explain, why the halacha is going to be the way it is if Pshuto Shel Mikra is something else. And for the Darshan, and we shouldn't forget the questions on the Darshan as well, for the Darshan, the question is, if the Torah wanted to tell me only the halacha, the way Chazal understand it, why didn't it just go and say it? Why did it have to write the law in the way that it does with a pshat that seems to point in a direction different from Chazal's halachic reading? The most outspoken, perhaps, or the most aggressive of the Rishonim in dealing with this tension between pshat and drash is Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, Rabbeinu Tam's brother, who lives basically at the end of the 11th into the 12th century, approximately 1080 to 11, dates are 1080 to 1160. And he, first of all, is probably the strongest pure Pashtun in general, not just in halacha, but in narrative as well. He has no problem calling out his grandfather and saying, Toehu, he's wrong. In a number of places, it's very, very clear that you are reading a dialogue that goes on sometimes between Rashbam and Rashi, even if Rashbam doesn't refer to Rashi at all. Although he does in the famous... Rashbam writes an introduction in three places, and I don't want to spend time on it except for one of them that's relevant to us. But the way he describes Rashi's attempt to write a pshat commentary, we all think of Rashi as the Pashtun. Rashbam writes about his grandfather, Gam Rabbeinu Shlomo Aveimi Meir Eine Gola, Nasan Lev Lefarej Pshuto Shel Mikra. He gave it the good old college try in trying to write a pshat commentary. And V'nitvakachti Imo Lefanav, and I debated with him in his presence. And Rashi agreed, according to Rashbam, that he should, if he had time, he would write new commentaries, Lefi HaPshatot Tamid Chadshim B'chol Yom, according to pshat, which is ever being rediscovered or being discovered. But the problem, as I said, the problem in halacha is much greater than the problem in narrative or in story. And what I'd like to do is to take, and since Mishpatim is the first major chunk of legal material in the Torah, what we'll do is we'll take a look at Rashbam's introduction to Mishpatim first. He has a separate introduction here, and then one other theoretical statement, and then we'll see how he actually carries out his agenda of following Pshuto Shel Mikra even in legal material. Now, Rashbam is a frum guy. You never have to assume that he is not going to behave the way Chazal tell him to. Even when he says in Perek Yud Gimel of Shmos that V'hayalach ot al yadcha means Lefi Omek Pshuto, the deep shot means you should always remember it. As I like to say, he wore either his grandfather's tefillin or his brother's. You don't have to worry that he wasn't putting tefillin on. But he says that the meaning of the pasuk is something else. Okay, so let's take a look. And I've given you the texts in both Hebrew and in English. Yedu v'yavinu yodei seichel ki lo vasi lefareish halachos afal pi sheim ikar. This is the tension, right? Halacha is the most important thing, but I'm not here to teach you halacha. As I said in Brachos, that halacha is learned out, and agada is learned out from extra language in Psukim, and you're going to find these interpretations, these halachic interpretations, in the commentary of my grandfather Rashi. But I have come lefaresh pshutan shel mikraot, to explain the simple sense of Torah, va'afaresh adinin va'alachos lefi derech eretz, and I will explain the laws and the statutes according to the standards of common human behavior. That's what he means by derech eretz. Nevertheless, halachos ikar. The halachos are central, the laws are central. I have this picture of Rashbam in the Beis Medrash looking over his right shoulder, and the guys are saying, why are you wasting your time with Chumash? Why are you wasting your time in Chumash? We have another kasha from Benutam, let's try to answer it. But it's clear that there is a sense that Rashbam has that he needs to respond to critics who are perhaps going to question the fact that, unlike Rashi, who in legal material is following the Midrashi Halacha pretty clearly, Rashbam is not going to do this. At the end of Sefer Shmos and the beginning of Vayikra, it's really meant to be one comment, but it got split apart, we have another theoretical remark by Rashbam, and it's worth looking at, because he tells you what he thinks you're supposed to be doing. Asher sam libo ledvar yotzreinu al yazuz minimu kei zekeini Rabbeinu Shlomo val yamush mehem. If you want to pay attention to God's word, do not move away from the remarks of my grandfather, because most of the halachot and drashot in them are krovim lifshutei hamikraot. Most of the halacha, the drashos in Rashi, are karov lipshat. In other words, he's given a little bit of room for Rashi to sort of fit in there nearby. And again, umiyituram, umishinui halashon, yeshlumot kulam, and you can learn all of them out from unusual phenomena in the biblical text itself. Excuse me, and this is sort of one of Rashbam's ways of saying the Torah, in a sense, is operating on multiple levels, and one of the levels is the writing of either the law or the story in such language that you have room to squeeze it a little bit more to get out the drusha in addition to the pshat. And it's, Tov Asher Tachos Bazasher Perashti Vigamiz Al Tanach Yadecha. So you should keep one hand on Rashi and one hand on my commentary, and the two together are going to teach you Torah properly. And then he moves on when he goes into Vayikra itself. He says there are many halachos in Vayikra, and you wise readers should pay attention to the commentary of my grandfather, because I'm not going to spend a lot of time in Vayikra, he says, except in places where I have to explain the simple sense of the text. Now, Vayikra is not only halacha, but it's priestly halacha, it's sacrificial halacha, it's material that doesn't lend itself to a lot of Pshuto Shel Mikra interpretation. There's not a lot that necessarily we want to know, and therefore, Rashbam says, I'm going to step back, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, and therefore, keep your eye on Rashi. So how does he do this, or what is he going to do? Now, so I've picked out a number of passages, all of which I happen to deal with. Some of you actually have had sons in my class who have actually learned these Rashbams. I simply lifted a section out of my first year material in Tanakh. And let's see, what am I blaming him for? So we have one of the most famous examples in right here in the beginning, the first parsha in Mishpatim. The Eved Ivri, after serving 6 years, he wants to stay on. He likes his master, and so on and so forth. So the master brings him to the judges. V'ratzad onavet oznoba marzeyav avadoli olam. His master pierces his ear with an awl or some kind of piercing tool, and he shall serve him le'olam. Now, the question is, what does le'olam mean? Well, we know what le'olam means. Le'olam in biblical Hebrew means forever. And Rashbam, looks at the pasuk and says, I know what Le'ola means. Lefi ha'pshat, according to the simple sense of the text, kol yemei chayav. It means all the days of his life. Kemo she'ne'emar b'Shmuel, v'yashav sham, or v'yashav sham, I think it is, ad olam. He shall, I don't remember whether it's Nasa Gachar, he shall live there or spend the rest of his life in the Mishkan, or whatever we're going to call the building where Eli is the Kohen. And there it says that he's going to spend the rest of his life there. It doesn't mean he's going to spend his life until the age of 50. So according to the simple sense of the text, says Rashbam, the Eved Ivri serves an entire lifetime once he's become a Nirtza. Now, without getting involved, Rashbam doesn't tell me how he reconciles this with Chazal, but I'll just mention a suggestion which I think is quite plausible. It's not my own, which is from the standpoint of Hilchos Avadim, he deserves to be there forever. Hilchos Avadim says, you're a Nirtza, you serve the rest of your life. But there's another parsha in the Torah that sort of intersects with this, and that's the parsha of Yovel. So when I come to the parsha of Yovel later on in Chumash, it's not that La'olam means until Yovel. La'olam means what it means. But the parsha of Yovel tells me that all slaves, all servants, are released in the Yovel year. So comes along Yovel, and in a sense, patters the Eved from this very, very long term of servitude. And that is one way of thinking about the two parshios in the Torah interacting with one another. Rashbam doesn't say it, but I suspect he must have had something like this, perhaps, in mind. Okay. So that's, you know, perhaps one of the most famous examples. Further on in the Parsha, we read a law about, again, a servant, but this is a different kind of servant. Here we're talking about an Eved Kanani, a non-Jewish slave or servant. And the Torah tells us that if a person strikes his male or female servant with a stick or a staff, umeis tachas yodo, and he dies immediately under that beating, nakom yinakem, he is to be avenged, which halacha says the owner is to be put to death because he is a murderer, and nakom yinakem. However, im yomo yomayim yamod, if the servant lives for a day or 2 days, lo yukam, so he is not to be avenged, ki chaspohu, because somehow or other there is an exemption granted because he is the money, the property of the owner of the one who strikes him. We're not going to discuss the nature of the what this might imply, but the fact is that is the Torah statement. Now here we see Rashbam reading the biblical text very closely in the case of this law and saying something that looks very radical. Bashevet bedavar she'adam ragil hakot et avdo lochicho, using something with which one is accustomed to strike a servant in order to discipline him. But aval becherev lefi hapshat afilu lachar yomo yomayim im yamut chayav mitah, if he strikes him with a sword, then even if the servant lives for a day or two, the law of yomo yomayim does not apply, and he the owner is to be put to death. She'ein ze derech tochecha ela derech ritzicha, striking your servant with a sword is not the way you discipline a servant, but it's the way you kill him. Now, this means that Rashbam, reading the pshat, and he may even think this is, I don't know whether he thinks this is true lahalacha or not, but there is somebody who thinks it's true lahalacha, and it's a fellow that we all know named the Rambam, and I've given you the text of the Rambam. There happens to be a parallel text to this. It's famous because it matches this Rashbam so strikingly. The Rambam says in Hilchos Ratzeach Shmiras Nefesh 2:14, it appears to me right? Yerayli, Rambam is hypothesizing, just as Rashbam did, but he's saying it lahalacha, that if he strikes his servant with a knife or a sword or a stone and so on, and it was the doctors evaluated him as being fatally wounded, right? That's amdu lemita. Eino bedin yom o yomayim. Then the law of yom o yomayim doesn't apply. But even if he dies a year later, he's to be executed. The owner is to be executed. Therefore, the Torah says bashevet. The Rambam is reading the pasuk the very same way that Rashbam is. The Torah did not give permission to strike him except with a shevet or a stick or a strap and such things, not a striking which is murderous. So here, the Rashbam is in very good company because what he is saying is true. Lefi hapshat, we see that the Rambam is willing to stick his neck out and say lahalacha. He says yerayli, but nevertheless, it would appear that the Rambam is pasuking lahalacha that this action by the owner is not protected by the rule of yomo yomayim. So here in this particular case, then the Rashbam's theoretical reading, and there are other cases. I mean, I mentioned sort of one very famous case. There's a generally the pasuk about somebody who's breaking into a housebreaker, a baba machteret. The Torah says, "Im zarcha Hashem shalav damim lo." That if the sun shines on him, then anybody who kills him is indeed going to be guilty. You're not allowed just to kill him randomly. Now Chazal explained him zarcha shemesh shalav in two different ways: either that there are witnesses, or if it is clear to you as the sun that lo ba'al iskei nefashot, that he's not come with the intention of killing, which means that according to Chazal, the fact that it happens in the daytime is not an automatic chiyuv for the person that kills him. Comes along the Ravid, however, and the Ravid also someplace or other in Ritzach Shmiras Nefesh, and says, by the way, ein mikra yotze midei pshuto, and lahalacha, if he's doing it in the daytime, if he kills him in the daytime, the house owner is chayav misa for killing the housebreaker because of the pasuk imzarach Hashem eshalav. So there are sort of, you can make this collection, and there's in one of the volumes of Torah Shlema on Mishpatim in an appendix, Rav Kasher gathers a number of cases in Rishonim and Achronim where they have read the Pshuto Shemikra Shaloka Halacha, and they're taking it seriously. Yeah.
So what does the Rashba or any Pashtan do with Pshuto Shemikra? Clearly deviate from Pshat.
The Rashbam doesn't have a problem. You follow them. The Shlosh Esrei Midos aren't the pshat. The Shlosh Esrei Midos tell me how to read the text halachically. And he would say that the biblical text, perhaps, I'm going to use my formulation, not his, is multivalent. The text can tell me one thing on a pshat level and another on a non-pshat level. And the more interesting question, although your question obviously is the first one to ask, the question is, what is the function of Pshuto Shel Mikra, both according to the Darshan and according to the Pashtun? In other words, what am I supposed to get out of it? And at least in one case, I'm going to make a suggestion that I can actually tell you that Pshuto Shel Mikra is going to teach maybe a moral lesson, which is that has been suggested. One of the examples, I think it's not my next one, it's the one after. Your point is well taken, that we need to have, we have to keep in mind the fact that Rashbam, like every other Talmudist, knows very well that the halacha I'm going to observe is the halacha of Chazal. No question. I mean, again, one of the most famous examples of this, so it's not an halachic passage, Rashbam takes the Breishis Aleph Hey, I think it is, right? Vayi Erev, Vayi Voker, right? The first Vayi Erev, Vayi Voker. And what does he say?
He says it starts in the morning.
What?
It says it starts in the morning.
What he says very carefully, it says it doesn't say vayhi laila vayhi yom, but rather it says vayhi erev. And what does erev mean? Nightfall. Vayhi voker, what does it mean? Daybreak. At daybreak of day two, the second day begins. Right? So erev is the end of a period of light. Boker is the end of a period of darkness. Oy vey, what have we just done, right, to make Kiddush Friday night? Answer, he made Kiddush Friday night. But he believed that Pshuto Shel Mikra, and again, we know that in the Mikdash, that is how they operated, with the day ending in the morning. There are others who suggest that until Matan Torah, that's how it was. I mean, there are a variety of ways of answering that one. But that, you know, yeah, we're going to say, Oy vey, vayere vayivoker. Okay, you'll tell me, the asmachta that this teaches us, that night comes before day, it's an asmachta. That's not what the pasuk means. The pasuk means something else. But the drashas chazal carries weight in the way that we behave. Now, the next example, and it, again, it's famous, but and here's a case where he gives you chazal also. I have a goring ox. And the goring ox is caught, and we convict it. And then the Torah says, "Sakol yisakel hashor v'lo yeachel et pisaro." The ox is to be stoned, and its flesh may not be eaten. Excuse me, big chiddush. Its flesh is not to be eaten after you stone it. Yeah, it wasn't shechted. Obviously, you can't eat its flesh. What do I need that for? So Rashbam says, "Lefi hapshat, v'lo yachelet b'saro, lo l'nochri, v'lo l'chelav l'achar sheniskal." According to the simple sense, its flesh may not be eaten. Not you may not eat its flesh. Its flesh may not be eaten by anybody. Even though normally dead animals can be sold to non-Jews or fed to the dogs, those are mutter b'hana after skila, but this one is not. In other words, it's almost as if he's reading v'lo yeyachel to mean isur hana'a, which, by the way, is the view of one of the opinions in Maseches Pesachim early on, where you're discussing whether lo yochal is the same as lo yeyachel. But he says the pshat of lo yeyachel means it may not be eaten by anybody. And then he says, "Vachachom impershu mishenigmar dino asra filu shachto lachag mardin." What is the rabbinic reading of this pasuk? The rabbinic reading of this pasuk is "Sakol yisakel hashor." Parenthesis. And if the owner quickly went and shechted it after the court case is over, you're still not allowed to eat it. That is the standard, what I'll call rabbinic reading, which requires the introduction of an extra clause between Sakol Yisakel Hashor and Belo Yechel Es Pesaro, is if you've done this improper act by shechting it, so now you still may not eat it. That is the Chazal interpretation, or the halachic interpretation, which you'll find in Rashi. But what's interesting is Rashbam grabbed onto this Lo Yechel in effect, to say that lo yachel means isur hana. Now that's good pshat, and it's also pshat that happens to coincide with halacha. But it's not the way that Chazal read the pasuk. And this reading is a pshat reading that happens to work out with Chazal, even though he takes a slightly different route in order to get there. Perhaps the most complicated of the cases. I wish I had a whiteboard. Is this next example? If somebody sends his animals out, I almost got caught there as a Karaite. If somebody sends his animals out and they graze in somebody else's field, you have to pay meitav sadehu umeitav karmo. You have to pay the best of the field or the best of the vineyard. Now, there's an undefined referent in the phrase best of his field or best of his vineyard. Who is his? Does it mean the best of the field, the quality of the field of the mazik, of the damager? or the best of the field of the damagee. Now, and there's another question together with this. Are we talking about quantity of payment, or are we talking about quality of payment? So there are two issues here. And Rashbam says that in this case, Chazal say that the damager has to use his best quality land. If he's going to pay with land, he has to give his best quality land. So sadehu means his belonging to the damager, number one. And number two, it's describing the quality of the payment. Okay, so if you want to pay with land, you've got to use edith, your best quality land. Rashbam says no. Although the view that Rashbam is suggesting is a das yochid in the Gemara, but the Rashbam, what he says is very sharp. Lefi pshuto mashma, the simple sense implies, lefi meitav sadehu v'charmo shalzeh hanizak yishalem. He has to pay the best quality of the land belonging to the damagee. Kishema min meitav achlu behemotav shel mazik. Because maybe the damager's animals ate the best quality of the damagee. At this point, I turn to the board and I draw three circles on the board. And the circles are labeled B, G, and E. And I say, okay, guys, what do B, G, and E stand for? Anybody want to try? The first two are easy.
Best.
Bad.
Good.
No. Bad, good, and eaten. Think about it. The guy has three fields. So the damager claims the quality of the eaten field is the same as the bad field. The damagee claims the quality of the eaten field is the same as my good field. Under normal halakhic circumstances and rules, what's the rule? Hamotze mechaberu olav haraya. The damagee has no leg to stand on to say, pay me my best, as if this were my best quality field. What does Rashbam say the Torah is telling me? That he has to pay kishema min meitav achlu b'amotav shel mazik. Maybe the animals ate from the best field. So what is... Here we may be able to think about a moral position. He says, don't tell me Hamotzi Mechaber Olav Haraya. Don't tell me that by the rules I'm not allowed to make this claim. Yad Mazik Al HaTachtona. The damager is going to bear the brunt of any kind of doubtful situation.
Say it's not.
What?
It's not even doubtful. It just make us pay. Did someone say there's no doubt?
You know what I mean? No, the point is you have to pay so the way Rashbam is reading, you have to pay as if the
Shema.
Yes, Shema.
But
right.
Sure that he ate from the worst one.
Oh, then there's no problem.
To me, it says make us no matter what.
No, but Meitav. So what he's saying is that Meitav Sadehu is teaching me the rule when there's something doubtful.
Yeah. Okay.
But he's now adding Rosh by putting Shema.
No, that's his reasoning. That's not drash. He's saying, why does the Torah tell me, in effect, to ignore Hamotzi Mechaber Olav Haraya? I'll explain to you that Shema Mimeitav Achlu B'Amotzav Shel Mazik. That we're going to suspend.
In the case of doubt, we're going to suspend.
In the case of doubt, we're going to suspend Hamotzi Mechaber Olav Haraya because you're the bad guy, and even though we're not sure what your animal did, you were irresponsible, and therefore... You're going to have to pay as if it's the other way. This is, I think, a case where we may actually see, if I'm correct in suggesting the way he's thinking, that we are throwing out a standard halachic principle of Motzi Mechaber Olav Haraya in order to say that we go out of our way to compensate the nizak even if though we're not sure whether the damage was so great. I think it's a really striking, striking case. Finally, I want to look at, again, a classic Pshat Drash issue. There are two parshios of Shomrim that we're going to read on Shabbos. Right? We have a parsha of Shomrim which talks about a person who gives a Beili, a Shomer, Kesef Okelim, money or small objects. And we have a parsha that talks about he gives the Shomer animals to watch. Now, what do Chazal say about these two parshios? The parsha about Kesef Okelim is talking about Shomer Chinam. And the parsha of Behema is talking about Shomer Sachar. So here we'll have a chance very quickly to see how two Rishonim sort of struggle, Rashbam, and we'll see Ramban here as well, how do they struggle with this? Rashbam says, the first parsha is exempt from Gneva Vaveda, and the second one is Chayav. Chazal say the first is Shomer Chinam, the second is Shomer Sachar. However, understand what I'm saying. In the first parsha, where you're given small things to watch, money or objects, so the expectation is, and he's thinking about Derech Eretz, right? What's the expectation? The expectation is that you're going to keep them in your house and you're going to watch them like you watch your own property in your house. So if they're stolen out of the house, you're patur. Why? Because you did what you were supposed to do. On the other hand, when you give animals to somebody to watch, the presumption is that you're going to have to watch them in the field so the thieves don't get to them. Therefore, if they're stolen, you're chayav. So what has Rashbam done? He has rejected Chazal's Shomer Chinam, Shomer Sachar, but rather says the pshat has to do with the nature of the objects that you're looking at. And just very quickly, since we're almost out of time, if you take a look at what Ramban does here, he also has the same problem. Ramban says what the Torah is doing is giving me a standard kind of example, or Diber HaKosuv Behoveh, the way Chazal say. It doesn't say explicitly, you're a Shomer Chinam in the first case, but usually when somebody gives you money or a couple of small items to watch, you're doing it for free. If somebody gives you animals to watch, Mistama, you're being paid for it. So the normal cases of Kesef Okelim is going to be Shomer Chinam. The normal case of shepherding is going to be Shomer Sachar. So here we see how two different Rishonim are grappling with this. How do we move from the nature of the Shmirah to the Shomer Chinam or Shomer Sachar? But what we've seen on the whole, and pull it together with this, is that Rashbam is willing to insist that the simple sense of the text is what it is, regardless of the fact that he knows the halacha very well, he observes the halacha very well. He says, it's not my job to teach you halacha. My job is to teach you the pshat and the pasuk.
Yes. You said that the reason that you can stop that.